from San Francisco, California, and Las Vegas, Nevada, where Shane Bettenhausen is poolside at the Hooters Resort, but not Barcelona, Spain. This is One Up Yours for Friday, September the 29th. I'm Garnet Lee. Here in the studio with me is John Davison.
Hi, I want to know where Luke is.
Don't we all?
He was supposed to be here half an hour ago.
He's hitting the sangria or something. I have no idea. We also have, today we actually have a special guest, Shane, so we actually use that title. Sam Kennedy's joining us.
Hey.
Here's here in the studio.
Sam's great.
Yes. So, because I defended you on my blog. Okay.
And we are searching for Luke. He is MIA in Spain.
Yeah, so I have AIM open on and Skype open, which is how we're speaking to Shane as well. And the second Luke emerges from whatever it is the hell that he's doing.
When's the last time we heard from him?
Last night, sometime.
Yeah, I was aiming with him last night. So. Which would have been
he appeared on Skype. I saw him on Skype briefly, so we think he is alive.
All right, so if you happen to be in the vicinity of Barcelona and, you know, we get to the end of this podcast and you haven't heard from Luke, see if you can, like, check the hospitals or the prison cells.
Or tapas bars.
Or tapas bars, yeah. Yes. Or, you know, belly dance places, whatever. So today's show, what we're going to do is...
That's Spain. Hmm? They're not really big on the belly dancing
no,
in
no.
Spain. I don't think so.
That's
it's
Morocco.
Kind of Mediterranean.
It's more Morocco, kind of, bit, you know, yeah. Further east.
Maybe that's where they went. Maybe they decided they needed some belly dancing. They hopped a little ferry and went over to Morocco. I don't know.
Good. This is setting the tone nicely. We're talking shit just 2 minutes in.
All right, so let's talk about what we're going to do on the show today. We did not get in a second TGS show last week like we had talked about. Just the logistics of the times and date switch and everything was too much.
And Shane, apparently you were staying about 100 miles away from everyone else, right?
Yeah, I was staying in Shibuya, and everyone else was in Makuhari.
Yeah, so you got to have fun. So.
We were up all night working. It was just bad, you know, try to coordinate that.
That's the print world for you. So that's the first segment we're going to get Sam and Shane kind of talking about a little bit of TGS wrap-up.
The second segment,
we're going to jump into XO6, of course, and cover that as much as we need to. And then we'll come back in the third segment and do news, because John has filled Luke's shoes and has all of our news ready to roll. So, Sam.
Sweet.
Sam, you and Shane were more impressed, I guess, than some of the impressions we had with PS3.
Yeah, I think early on, I think the Kutaragi thing left a bad taste in everyone's mouth, and like everyone was like,
terrible.
Oh God, here we go, jeez. And then we actually got down to the floor, and we saw like a lot of really, really good games, Virtua Fighter, and even other stuff like I liked Armored Core, I liked. I really like that Sony RPG, the
Monster Kingdom.
That
you know,
really
we talked
good.
About that on the One-Up show.
Yeah. But, I mean, there was just a lot of really, really good-looking games. Resistance looks great. So many good-looking games. And I was just pretty impressed. I thought, like, okay, well, Sony really did show me why I would spend extra money on this console.
Which game would you buy as a like, I'm going to buy a PS3 game?
Well, I would buy, I'm a big Ridge Racer fan, so I'm going to buy that. It looked really, really good in HD. And I also would buy MotorStorm just to show off the system to all my friends.
You'd really buy Ridge Racer?
Yeah. I know. I've bought all of them, so. But,
It's predictably fun. I mean, you know what it is, and it is what it is.
But is it really substantially version. Different from Ridge Racer 6?
No, not really,
it looks better.
It looks better.
Some new stuff, but yeah, I mean, it really is just an upgrade.
What are you saying about it looks better?
It's sharper,
more effects,
stuff like that.
It does have a lot of effects going on.
I mean, Ridge Racer is a really fun game, I would love to have that like on HD and everything. And okay, but
do we have a copy of Ridge Racer around the office for 360?
Yeah, we probably have loads of them.
Because I'd like to throw it in a machine and see it at 720p. Mm-hmm. Because at the time that I was playing Ridge Racer, I hadn't bought my HD at home yet, so I haven't really played that in HD. Because Ridge Racer on
PS3. Ridge Racer 6 it does not look as good as Ridge Racer 7. It really doesn't. If you look at them side by side, there's a stylistic difference between them two.
Okay, but all right, sure, but. I mean, there are other games that I would... I mean, I'm really, really looking forward to Resistance, for sure. Like, like seeing the demo that Ted Price gave me... like, we actually have the whole thing on the One-Up show this week. But, like, seeing that demo was just like, wow, this looks really, really cool.
Coming out of TGS, I think the multiplayer is going to be bigger than the single player. Everyone I spoke to is like, the single player is all right, but, like, the multiplayer is where it's at. I think if people compare its single player game to the single player game of like Halo or something like that, it might not really stack up. I have a sinking feeling. But
why
I think
do you just think the story's not all that? Or
you know, I think it just isn't maybe new enough, because it does still kind of feel like a mix of Call of Duty and Half-Life. You know, it feels a little bit like you've played it before,
right?
Slightly.
But like the multiplayer and having like all those different just crazy weapons, I think that's going to add a lot to the game.
Wait, I got to stop for a second. So if the single player doesn't work because it feels like a lot of other games you played, mm-hmm. how on earth is a multiplayer first-person shooter with that kind of stuff not going to feel like something you've already played?
Well, every multiplayer game feels like every other multiplayer.
So it's okay for
multiplayer?
It's just a matter
of how good it is. Yeah, I mean, multiplayer is just kind of like how good it is.
That's totally lame, Shane. Come on.
But I don't think multiplayer has had...
I think people have very different expectations for multiplayer and single player.
Right, and you've got 40 people playing at once, and you've got all these really, really crazy weapons that you've never really had in a multiplayer game like that before.
I'll buy that the 40-player thing makes a difference. Mm-hmm. I'll buy that.
Well, I think the weapon types...
And Insomniac have a good track record with coming up with wacky weapons.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think this game has to be successful on a single player level in order to capture the market. I don't think
I'm not saying it's going to be bad. I'm just not saying it's going to be like legendarily good as a single player game.
To me, that harbors very bad tidings for the PS3, because to me, the Resistance is the game. I mean, that's the game that has to be.
Well, but the problem is, like, if it's like an 8 of a single player game, that's still really good, but it's not a 10. And like, you know, not every game can be a 10. Very few games can be 10s.
Okay, so maybe we're cutting here. If it's an 8, an 8 would be great.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Like, we've only played bits and pieces. And, you know, as soon as the first review comes in.
We should talk about something other than Resistance, because I think anyone out there who's going to be standing in line for a PS3 is already decided that they're buying Resistance, whether they're into shooters or not.
And probably Warhawk.
Warhawk comes out next summer. It looks really cool. but you know what impressed me was Genji. Like, I didn't like the first Genji. It's just like an Onimusha clone. But now, like, it's pretty fun. The camera's better. They added tons of effects. It uses the motion controller now for dodging.
Shane's gone to Vegas and
I was pleasantly surprised by the first Genji, because I went into it expecting an Onimusha clone and kind of got a bit more out of it than that.
How long did you play it?
I beat it. I had to review it for you guys. So.
It's short. Did you play the Genji at TGS?
Yes, I did. I wrote the preview.
You didn't like it?
So I liked it, but in that sort of stylish action, I think that Devil May Cry 4, what the fuck owns the damn thing?
Of course, Ninja Gaiden both completely own it. But,
so you know,
I had a good time with the demo. It's not something I would like, you know, run out and buy, but at launch, I think I could do a lot worse.
Right. I mean, it is like the type that would be a decent launch title. Like, you're going to pick up a bunch of games anyway, and you know, that's
pretty. The gameplay's fine.
It's not going to be your
$60
pick,
great.
People buy things at launch. People buy Cameo at launch. People buy Summoner at launch. You know, people buy bad games at launch.
Buy Cameo at launch. Remember, the Cameo sales were like
No, it was 150,000 people bought Cameo at launch, so. You know, I think Genji is a game I might buy at launch, just because I have played it. I know I like it.
See, I agree with John. I really liked the first Genji. I had a lot of fun with it. The action was really cool. The animation, the art style, everything that makes it, you know, like all the finished polished part of a Japanese game. And I liked the demo that was at TGS. But then you walk across the aisle and play Devil May Cry and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously Devil May Cry is a better game.
But was it really great? When we did the show... Well, you guys were all out there. I mean, I think those of us that were sitting here, I mean, we'd seen the videos. So we'd not seen it in high def at this point.
I think
our impression was, it's just Devil May Cry again.
Mm-hmm. I think seeing it in high def definitely changed.
But is that all it is? I mean, have they done more to it?
I really like the new attack.
Because this is Capcom, remember, who, like, you know, I mean, they just keep iterating and iterating and iterating and not really innovating. I've loved them, and you know, particularly the third one, because it was so fucking weird. But have they done anything with it, or is it just a very nice looking?
I think it's a very nice looking game.
But that doesn't bother me because I think this is also awesome.
But isn't this speaking to the problem of a lot of the stuff at on PS3 at TGS? In that all they really were was very good looking versions of something we've already seen.
But I think that's exactly what you just said about Ridge Racer,
it looks prettier.
But this is the same thing that we said right before the PS2 came out, and we were all excited about those games at that point, too. So I think, we're suckers, I guess.
I know,
but I'm really excited about
the fact that people are starting to think about the controls. And in the new EGM, Shane, you guys did something, we're talking about both the Wii and the PS3 and what the controller does in different games. And then, and Garnet, you talked last week about how in Lair, there's a lot of sort of like jogging the joypad to kind of butt into things and actually thinking about the 3D space of what's in your hand. I think that is more, I mean, like, if stuff doesn't look prettier on PS3, then Sony's fucked.
Right.
It's got to be about something else.
No, I think actually Lair is a good, really good example, though, where you've got really, really good, like, visuals, but you also are using that the motion sensing controller. And
man,
stuff.
I so disagree.
Why?
Because I loved Lair, but I hated having to fuck around with the controller. I was like not far into it. I'm looking over at the producer guy, and I'm like, dude, you're going to put dual stick control on this, right? Because I don't want to fly the dragon like this. It's because it was cool. Okay, so the idea is like the controller is the reins, and I got that. But I've played games with sticks for so long, I kept on fighting the urge to use sticks. You know?
Where it seemed a little clunky was when you started like trying to hit the other dragons with it and stuff like that, and you had to like but just actually like the flying parts are cool. I thought Warhawk is really, really good with the controller, like being able to just like swoop up and down and everything. That was really, really
I think
fun.
What'll be important for them with that controller is sensitivity.
Because I was on this end and I was just editing the stuff that you guys were doing and putting it on the site.
Right.
But what I got out of that was I got to read everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I could tell when you guys were enthusiastic because you wrote more.
Yeah.
And but the sense that I got from all of the games that did use the PS3 pad was that it was very imprecise. I mean, you didn't explicitly say it, but there was this sort of impression I was getting from it that it was like that it's all a bit vague.
Well, that's the same problem with the Wii controller too, though. Like, there, well, not every game on the Wii, but you do get that. Okay, so I was talking about this with someone yesterday, where like with a game on the Wii, like say the boxing one, for instance, you're like the second you start to really, really get into it and you start to really do like big swings and stuff, it doesn't register, and that's like the big flaw I think with that system is like once you really start having fun, then it's like it kind of falls apart.
Mm. I spent 45 minutes yesterday playing Wii for Madden. EA brought it by the office.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the difference between playing with their motion sensing controls and Sony's was definitely noticeable.
Really?
Definitely noticeable.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean,
more precise or?
I didn't feel, once I knew what to do with the controllers, I didn't feel like I was thinking about it. I was just doing stuff with them. Whereas when I was flying the dragon in Lair, I was definitely like looking at my hands and thinking about moving stuff around and trying to get
something
to
I noticed this with Warhawk when I've seen video of that as well, and the video with Lair. And what you tend to find is, particularly the stuff where you guys were pointing cameras at people playing rather than the sort of the orchestrated stuff that was direct feed or whatever. You'd find people, you know, when the dragon swoops in and it has to land on a ledge, people would miss the ledge. Mm-hmm. And it would sort of, and it was the same with Warhawk. When people were having to go down and strafe stuff on the ground, the plane would be bumping into the edge and bouncing off. And then in Lair, the dragon would be bouncing off. And when it gets down on the ground, he'd be sort of like, you know, running along, and it had that weird sort of three-quarter view camera. And the dragon was sort of like drifting one way and then the other. And it looked like whoever was playing wasn't 100% in control of it.
I think it's a sensitivity thing.
Yeah, I think Warhawk did play a little bit better than it did at E3, and that's the general. Yeah, but I mean, it's not quite. I mean, it's not perfectly precise, but it is fun. I still think like for a game like that, it's more fun to be able to.
Do you think it's all going to move towards a hybrid of the? Because at the moment, it seems the controls are going all the way one way or the other, and eventually, it's going to be for sort of big general flying the spaceship around. You move the joypad, but when it comes down to the finessing, you're going to have to go back to the sticks to sort of refine things.
Cool. Yeah, I think so.
So the Sony producers on Lair told me that that one of the struggles they've had right now is that motion sensor has a ton of sensitivity, and trying to figure out how to use it and get the right balance is what they're trying to strike. So,
and letting people define for themselves how sensitive they want. I think that's going to be important.
Did you play the Monster Kingdom game?
No.
You, Shane?
No, did that use the motion?
Yeah, so like when you're capturing...
Oh, I didn't get to play that one.
And that's kind of where I kind of got the feel of the motion sensor. When you're capturing the souls of the enemy monsters, there's like a bar on the screen, and instead of just slamming it all the way to one side or the other, you actually have to like control how far you move it with the controller. And it has that degree of... you can actually control how far you tip it each direction. When they start getting a better grip of how to balance that sensitivity, I think it'll work better.
So did anyone...
Like, I think
did
Metal Gear...
Yeah, I was just going to bring up Metal Gear. I was going to ask
the
if any of you,
trailer.
Yeah, did any of you speak to anyone at Konami about the controls at all?
They're not talking because they were offering like an exclusive. Some magazine has an exclusive on an interview with Kojima. But I think it's pretty clear from the trailer that it is using the motion controller for things like leaning and rolling the barrel. And hopefully it's just like, you know, where it fits. I don't want them to make the whole game control with motion. I think that'd be kind of confusing. So I guess we'll wait and see, but... I have a faith that they'll use it in some, you know, creative ways that doesn't overshadow the regular gameplay.
I think this goes back to the same thing we talked about originally, which was the Wii was designed around the controller, and the controller was always intended from the ground up to be a motion sensing device, and that was all built around that. Obviously, motion sensing was built into the DualShock controller, and it's an add-on feature that isn't, you know, part and parcel of the whole design theory.
Right. So, see, a lot of people really like Lair. I think it's just divisive, and when you first pick it up, you're either kind of on board or not with the motions flying. Like, I liked it. I liked Lair a lot. I thought it was really creative, and it felt fresh to me.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll get there. I think I could like it, but I want to feel it more refined. I want to feel it more balanced.
Another thing, just talking about the PS3 show at TGS, there were a lot of good playable games, like more than we expected. And a lot of them looked really good. But in addition to that, like all around Sony's booth were, the trailers for like the Final Fantasies and the Metal Gears and the Devil May Cries and just, these really big name AAA titles from last gen or the gen before that are still there with new sequels. And yeah, it is more of the same stuff, but these are really important franchises of games that I want to play.
Right.
And I'm not going to discount them just because I've already seen previous versions of them.
I mean, that's the thing. I guess that's the thing, too. Like, when you were actually at TGS and you were at the Sony booth and then you were, like, surrounded by, like you said, like Square and Capcom and all of these other Japanese publishers that are really, really pushing a lot of PS3 stuff, you really do get that sense, like, wow, Sony owns this show and Sony has, like, a great, great lineup going forward. And it's something that, like, Nintendo wasn't there. They rarely show up at TGS, and
you couldn't play any Wii games there.
Right. So. They probably forced third parties not to allow anyone to play the Wii games there and stuff. And then Microsoft was holding up a lot of stuff for X06. So I mean, it was Sony's for the taking.
Did any of you three go to the event at Polyphony?
No.
Tom Byron went for us.
Right. I was reading on his blog that got a lot of feedback. Well,
I was a little disappointed when I played Gran Turismo, and it's Gran Turismo, and some parts are really impressive. Like the 3D mountain was the best mountain I've ever seen. The 3D spectators were amazing. But at the same time, there was a little pop-up, and I was like, wow, like I don't expect to see pop-up in Gran Turismo.
Garnet, you said in your preview that it was a bit surreal.
To me, it feels like the first time I saw a parallax scrolling 2D game, the background looks totally disconnected from the landscape.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that too.
It's
like a 3D game going on in front of a still image in the background.
Yeah, or almost like you are inside a globe. It's like you're inside a giant globe, and you can see like the horizon painted on the inside of the globe, and then you're driving along on the land, and it's all moving around. It's very
definitely looks a little weird.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. It's so high def. But it's
full on GT4, right?
Yeah, it's just yes.
Is it? I mean, or is it stripped down GT4?
Well, I don't think we know. Shane, do we know the specifics of that?
Well, it has two different modes. It has like the professional mode, which is the 1080p mode, which I believe has like new tracks, and then like it has just GT4 again, I think, which is like the non-professional mode.
Okay.
We did talk to Phil about the whole like downloading cars and all that, paying for it and all that. And he said it must have been some kind of a misunderstanding. I mean, he didn't really know what had been reported in Famitsu.
Because there's been speculation since that they're now going to, there's a version that will be free.
Right.
Is the new rumor.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing that was interesting. Like Phil said that, he said it wouldn't surprise him if like going in the future, like games like that, they would offer it for free, and then basically they'll make their money back on.
Games are such an easy one because there's so many sponsorship opportunities.
Right. Well, I think that could be smart because you give the code away for free, you download it from whatever the service ends up being, and then if you're just really casual and you go, well, I've heard GT is really cool and I can drive my car in it.
Right.
That you'll download, your car and your friend's cars, and you'll try them out against each other, and you'll drive them around the Grand Canyon, and that'll be enough.
And this is the same series that
that's what
Japan.
I would buy.
Right.
I'm casual with GT, I'm never going to unlock 100 cars, so.
And this is the same series that in Japan, automotive manufacturers have used, as giveaway promo in their showrooms, like Toyota. Wasn't it Toyota that did the special edition?
I think so, yeah.
Nissan did a big promotion with it as well, with the Z and some of the cars.
So, I mean, it's a perfect tie-in. It's a perfect sort of thing. How will it work with other games, though, that don't have big money automobile manufacturers behind it? Could you see yourself buying a Ratchet and Clank game in the same sort of way and just buying, I just want this level and this gun and that character?
Maybe not that, but I can see it with multiplayer. I can see, not wanting the whole sort of Quake or Doom or Counter-Strike-y type experience, but maybe downloading one map that I've heard a bunch of people just to get a taste of it and go in and maybe buy a skin and a gun and a level. I mean, Counter-Strike did a lot of that sort of sort of buying with credit in the at the beginning of the game, but taking that and, okay, for $5, I can dip into this game and see if it's for me. It's almost like eliminating the need for demos. Do you know what I mean?
Right, right.
Because, I mean, at the moment they use Xbox Live and what we've done with OPM, it's, you know, you use the demo and it's, you know, if they get the demo right, it makes people want to go and buy the game. But by doing this stripped down version, I mean, I think, you know, it's going to take a while to get used to the idea of having to pay for these little pieces. But if the core experience is free and you enhance it with money, you're constructing your own demo and then making the demo as big as you want it to be until eventually it gets to the point where hopefully the service will say, okay, you've downloaded a bunch of stuff. Now, as a special offer, because you've spent all this on little bits and bobs, for $20, you get the whole game.
Right.
Well, that's where it needs to be.
There needs to be an upsell system in the structure of the game that it's like, you are clearly getting into this.
And not a la carte you to death.
Right. But that's what we were all railing against with GT, is it was going to a la carte you up to $1,000. But I think if GT was structured that, okay, you've bought 20 cars now, and you've bought 5 tracks, you're pretty much there at a full game. So now, because you've dropped $30, $40 on this thing, we'll give you the whole experience for cheap.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
Okay, so Shane, before we put TGS06 in the annals of history, final thoughts and responses to the people who have called you out as a big fanboy and not seeing clearly?
Well, I mean, for one thing, at the end of that one-up show segment, you know, the little SDF thing was a joke. I didn't actually know he was going to make it to tape. It was, that was meant as a little bit of Colbert Report-esque, you know, over-the-top reporting. But yeah, and in hindsight, I really wish I could have got to play Blue Dragon and Lost Odyssey. The lines were insane. From what I heard from people who did play it, the Blue Dragon's really fun. Lost Odyssey was really boring, which is the way they looked to me when Sakaguchi demoed them. Yeah, but other than that, like, I think that Microsoft had a really good show, kind of, but we'll have to wait and see if Blue Dragon sells. I think that PS3 had a great showing, but I'm a little concerned that they're kind of giving up on Japan this year, because I hear they're sending almost all the hardware here to America because they really want to fight 360. So I'd be curious to see what actually happens this fall in terms of sales. I think Nintendo might still run away with Japan, so it's gonna be a crazy Christmas. There's good games for every system except for maybe like GameCube and Xbox.
Well, how about we give you a chance in just a minute on the other side of the break to talk about the competitor, Microsoft. When we come back in a minute,
let's do it.
We'll hit X06. Unfortunately, still don't have the guys from Barcelona, but we have plenty of stuff to cover, so we'll get to that in just a minute.
You're listening to One Up Yours on the One Up Radio Network.
Hey, kids! Podcasts are here. You've been hearing about podcasts? You like podcasts? You've been reading about podcasts? Well, we got a podcast. Jeff, don't we got a podcast?
We do have a podcast.
CGW Radio.
CGWRadio.oneup.com.
What's that? One of those URL things?
Podcast.oneup.com.
Whoa.
You can also get it at iTunes Music Store.
Wow!
Holy cow!
Can't get enough of DL.TV? Then download our podcast. Just go to DL.TV and click on the audio link.
Turning them loose.
You'll be able to listen to Patrick, Robert, and the rest of the gang over and over and over again.
Remember to keep the ear canal clean and don't share if you don't want to risk spreading disease.
Luke, wherever you are, we wish you were here, but we're going to soldier on into the X06 information without you. Hopefully we'll be able to catch up some with you when you get back. Until then, let's go forward. Let's talk about X06. What's the biggest thing out there, John? What do you think?
What's the biggest thing?
The big announcement was Halo.
Halo,
yeah. Halo RTS.
Halo Wars.
We're going to go straight into that.
We should go straight into that. I mean, just looking at traffic to 1UP and to game videos, it was certainly the thing everyone wanted to read about and watch, despite the fact it was only CG.
Yeah, that was...
I am going to go out there right now and tell you this. The Halo RTS by Ensemble is going to be an unmitigated disaster.
Why?
Wow. Why do you think this?
This is like
Ensemble
putting together
have a fantastic track record in RTS.
Building
game.
Age of Empires? Do you really
You're saying Age of Empires isn't good?
But, no, you know, what is Halo Wars? Do you know how it plays?
No. I know what... okay.
No, because they showed CG.
Yeah,
apparently
brilliant.
It's going to have people being lifted up by the neck.
Whatever.
And like...
Great dramatic. Video. I know this. I know what I saw years and years ago from Bungie when they were first talking about Halo and we thought it was an RTS. And I know what they did with Myth. So I have in my head a cool action-oriented 3D environments sort of RTS game that's very fast-paced. And I know that's not what Age of Empires is. Age of Empires is management of... Like, I want to be resource-gathering in a Halo game.
Oh, but we don't know that it's going to play like Age of Empires.
And
okay,
also, I mean,
that's what those guys' strengths are.
But you don't think there's a bunch of Bungie guys, like, trotting down to ensembles, like, you know...
They have a lot of irons in the fire. I think that they look at Ensemble as, and Microsoft's promoting Ensemble internally as, these guys are RTS pros. They'll make you a great RTS.
I think that the whole Microsoft Game Studio strategy is all about cross-pollination of technology and artistic direction, and I can't imagine the Bungie guys letting go of Halo.
Then
right?
Why do you bring in an ensemble?
Because they've got an engine and an experience.
And I don't want to see a Halo RTS in that engine. It doesn't belong in that engine. I don't want little bitty Master Chiefs running around on the screen with little bitty warthogs.
What team would you have given this game to? Like the Total Annihilation people or something? Like who would
no,
you
but that's not game? That's not the right team either. You know, I was thinking about this the other night. The only exterior team. Other than having Bungie do it, like with a group that built Myth, and
Blizzard to make it.
Give it a Relic.
Relic would be an okay choice. My first choice would be, and I don't even know the name of the team because I didn't do the research on it, but the guys who made the Battlezone RTS remake, because that's the kind of game that would be a Halo RTS to me.
Are you kidding?
But did you play that game?
Yeah,
that game was awesome. You were in the action, you were in the middle of the action, and you had all of the strategic conflict at the same time. So imagine you're driving around in a Warthog as the Master Chief, because again, Halo is about being the Master Chief, right? I want to be Master Chief. I want to be in the game.
You're doing, yeah. Now you're commanding Spartans. There's more than one Master Chief, dude.
Okay, right. So I want to be a Spartan commander in the middle of the battle. I don't want to be the Sarge guy in the dropship. Okay,
I think you are all gloom and doom. We haven't even seen the game yet. It's a smart brand extension. They need to start using the Halo name for the thing.
What is bizarre, though, is given all the Live Anywhere stuff, I mean, why...
It not being on PC?
Yeah. I mean, I would be fine with announcing it for both. Because, you know, and going the same direction that they are with Shadowrun, saying this is something that we want everyone to be able to play together, and it's really important. But announcing it just for 360
and
is
they
just
went
bizarre.
To, and they went to great lengths when they called me to tell me that it's absolutely not talking about PC. Right.
Darren especially, went fucking bananas on his blog about it.
Well, those guys have never made a console game, right?
Ensemble?
Yeah.
No,
oh, but
I mean...
Wait, they're a great choice, Sam. No, they're a great choice. Yeah. They're right guys.
But what's weird about it is, like, you know, the reason you can't play FPSs on PC and 360 is because, well, mouse and keyboard isn't fair, but this is an RTS. Like, it is fair for everybody, yet they aren't announcing it for both.
Well, I think with the first-person shooter, part of the strategy there, I think, is to really push the 360 joypad as the standard Microsoft Games joypad. I think, it looks like Shadowrun is optimized for pad, right?
Which is, I think, is going to
well.
Make
it feels
PC
very
kind of
good
uneasy.
Playing with the pad. Yes,
yeah,
it's very
on both platforms.
Before they go any further, they should go ask the former Westwood guys over at EA now how they liked doing a Battle for Middle Earth and how well that sold. By the way,
I would actually like completely disconnected to this. Like when we're designing new things for 1UP and new pages and new parts of the 1UP network.
Yeah.
One of the things that we always do when we're testing stuff is try and think of the longest game name we possibly can because we need it. In a box. This week, we have a game whose acronym is longer than most games. The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Battle for Middle Earth. 2. The Return of the Witch King.
God, you get that all down.
What
That's
the
awesome.
Fuck.
I know. It's like they're just trying to break our pages.
I know. That's never going to fit anywhere. Even the acronym's not going to fit in some boxes.
It's not even going to fit on the box.
And also, do we really need another Battle for Middle Earth 2? Does anyone care? Thank you. All right.
Meanwhile, back in Barcelona.
Back in Barcelona.
Halo Wars, it's going to be big. It's going to be good. I think you guys are
just... It just needs to be on PC, too, though.
And it's what? Is it next year or is it distant future?
Future.
Distant future.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it could be a disaster. I'm saying it's September the 29th. You heard it right here.
All right, this is the other Halo brand extension, which is being overseen by Wingnut.
I think this is really significant just from a news standpoint. Irrespective of the game, I think Microsoft partnering with a known name, I think, is really good, clever PR for them right now.
Yeah.
It's the kind of move that Sony needs to be making right now.
Well, they have Spider-Man. They have Spider-Man now, but they have Lord of the Rings. It's like, you know.
But I think, you know, putting known names associating with them game with games and new franchises, and it sort of it makes it a little more acceptable to people that aren't really into games. It's like, oh wow, Peter Jackson.
EA kicked it off with Spielberg. Yeah. This is kind of a response to that as well. So
there's no indication of what kind of game he's thinking of, though, right?
No.
Still, but, interesting story.
It's really cool. I'm really curious what he comes up with that's different from Halo as
it
is now.
I'm much more interested in that at a conceptual stage than Halo Wars.
Yeah. What else out at XO6? Luke went to look at Mass Effect. So we saw some new stuff from that. That looks very impressive. New areas, new...
I didn't see that stuff, but I'm high on Mass Effect.
I'm still giddy for that game.
Yeah, everyone's still very high on it. I wonder if it's going to really come out in spring or if it's more like a fall game now. Did they say that? I have a sinking feeling it's a fall
Everything
game.
Is just flagged 07 now.
Huh. They shouldn't rush.
You're probably right, Shane.
Wait.
Yeah.
They should wait until it's perfect.
I won't be the least bit upset if they do because, I mean...
Yeah, right. Same here. Right.
The other game everyone's raving about, Bioshock.
Oh, God. I saw the video.
The video. Oh, my God. That's so sick.
Yeah.
Ken
Levine. The video's partially CG, right? That's what I heard.
Paging
that's
Ken.
I assumed it was CG, but if it's not, like, holy shit.
No, that's not CG, dude. That's in-game. That whole narrative sequence
someone told me it was half it was CG, but...
We need to get Ken on the show.
Yeah.
Yep.
We need to get him on the show and talk because he's really cool. You know, Scott did that interview with him about a week before XO6, and the dude is...
I got a message from Luke when he was still alive that he talked to Ken we did a story a while ago about the importance of narrative in games. Remember that? Where there was the response back from a bunch of developers. Ken actually said that he kind of regrets not being a part of that story, and he wants to come and talk about the importance of narrative and storytelling in games.
Let's get him on. Ken, give me a holler. We'd like to have you on for sure. I think it's interesting, too. I saw a lot of people, especially on NeoGAF, who have said that, you know what, after seeing the video, they decided to go back and put System Shock 2 in, and we're playing it, and that other than the graphics...
The One Up Yours community was playing System Shock a while ago, I remember.
That's right. They did it as a retro.
Yeah, and that was sort of inspired by the Bioshock news. I mean, I think it's going to be a really significant game, and it's on both platforms, which is great.
I have to wonder, actually, if Bioshock and Alan Wake, which both look really cool to me, if they are too adventure-y for the general public and they're going to be, like, cult classics that we really like and, like, hardcore people like, but they're just a little maybe too weird for, like, mainstream. We'll see.
Let's talk about Alan Wake a little bit because, you know, it's that Brian described it as a total mindfuck.
Which is good. I like that.
So we actually have Sean from CGW here, who's being our engineer in Skip's wake. And you guys just put... Can you grab a microphone?
Let's give Sean a microphone.
Yeah, I'll give him mine for a second.
All right. So you guys, the last issue of CGW has Alan Wake on the cover, right?
It does.
So you can shed a bit of light on this game.
I can. So they're calling it a psychological thriller. They're trying to avoid the horror kind of term.
Mm-hmm.
We know that you play... Not just Alan Wake, but a bunch of characters in this kind of mining town.
Oh, that's cool.
And he's a horror novelist. And the hook is that at the beginning of the game, he stumbles upon a hitchhiker, and he realizes that the story he's writing currently, like, this is something that happened in his story. So the hitchhiker, he gets out of his car to go look at a wreck, and he realizes that that he sees himself in there, and then he looks back and see the hitchhiker get hit by a truck, which is what he wrote in his story, and then it kind of all goes from there.
Oh, so did they take the wife part out of it?
No, the wife's still in there, too.
Okay, because that was like... Did anyone else 2 years ago at E3 see the game in the ATI Theater?
Yeah.
Because I fell in love with it then. I mean, it was like instant...
That was the early one where it had the sort of jetty and everything at night, and it was all foggy.
Right, it was really atmospheric.
Yeah, it was really...
The wife stuff is his wife died, and he's...
On sabbatical or whatever.
On sabbatical in this little resort town, and he's going to a psychiatrist for art therapy.
So it's very Stephen King.
It is very Stephen King.
But she's there. Or it's not her. Or is it her? I mean, that's kind of the thing.
We don't really know. Yeah, maybe it's a mindfuck. But I guess the gameplay is still kind of nebulous. We know you play multiple people. We've seen segments where you're driving around town in kind of a free-roaming driving segments. We know that... light plays a big part of it, so he's got his flashlight, and like he sees these specters, shines his light on them, and he can freeze them and shoot them and stuff like that. So,
yeah, it seemed like when I was talking to the producer several months ago, they were talking about it almost sounded sort of like Silent Hill-ish.
It seems Silent Hill-ish, but maybe not as surreal and abstract, maybe a little more grounded in like more American fiction,
American Gothic sort of stuff.
I mean, Stephen King is a good comparison because everything I've seen about it and read about it, and
there's definitely something weird Stephen that King-ish. Happens when it gets dark.
Yes,
something
weird. The day night cycle is a big part of it too, which is a lot of the screenshots and a lot of the videos you've seen show the, you know, the transition from day to night, and that's a big part of like. During the day, I guess it's the safe zone, which is kind of standard stuff when mm-hmm. you're talking horror games. But then at night, that's when everything gets all, you know, fucked up.
As long as there's no civil defense siren when it goes to darkness, I'll be fine.
Yeah, but I'm really excited because I think it shows a lot of growth from Max Payne. Because Max Payne is kind of contrived and a little bit Me Too. And this looks really different and cool. So
yeah, it's pretty strange diversion from Max Payne for Remedy.
Yeah,
Shane will argue about whether or not Max Payne was Me Too-ish another time.
All right.
I just have to call you out on that. I'll put that marker out there. We have to argue about that sometime.
Well, do you think Max Payne stood the test of time? Not really.
While we've got you on the PC side, the Marvel MMO, you guys talked a little bit about it this week, I think.
Little bit.
Yeah.
Don't know a whole lot
about it. We don't
know
much about it yet, but...
How did they
this has been in the works for a long time.
Hated each other.
Marvel, Cryptic, and Microsoft together.
Yep, together.
Yeah.
One big happy family.
I'm not a comic book guy, so it doesn't do anything for me, really.
I'm more a DC.
It's a better license than DC.
Yeah. So Shane, as mostly a console guy, do you get excited about that then?
Well, I mean, you know, as console guys, I've always looked at City of Heroes and been like, well, that seems pretty cool, and we'd like to try it. And now that they have the actual real license that is the best comic license, I think that a lot of people will give it a shot. I mean, I think it comes down to a lot of how the gameplay turns out. We haven't seen anything on this game.
I mean,
the ingredients are there for it to be good.
City of Heroes was pretty much, you know, a Marvel simulator in a way anyway, so now it's just got the official license. And I'd like to see what they do more with the gameplay, because there's some stuff that was pretty shallow, I thought, in City of Heroes.
Mm-hmm. If you're going to be excited about something on PC, it's got to be Hellgate London, right? Right?
Yeah, I think so.
Don't you think? I mean, what do you guys think? You guys...
I'm psyched for that.
I heard opinion had actually, like, chilled a bit on it, that it wasn't quite as impressive as it had been previously.
Well, it's been around for so long now.
Yeah, they've been dragging it out for so long. Just release the damn thing.
Yeah, have you guys gotten an update from them lately? When are they ever going to say, okay, maybe we'll go ahead and sell the thing?
We're talking to them this month, so...
Oh, cool.
Hopefully have more for you in, like, a week or so.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. I think that could actually transfer onto consoles very well.
Potentially, yeah.
I mean, it's straightforward. It's got enough action to it. A good menu system. Mm-hmm. I could easily see playing that with my 360 controller.
Yeah.
Easily.
All right. Let's hit a few of the other pieces of news from X06. Doom was on Xbox Live. Has anyone downloaded it yet?
Jeremy Parrish. How weird is that? It's like sometimes I read emails from him and I'm like, whoa, wait, you did what? He's like, oh, yeah, by the way, I downloaded Doom for Xbox Live. Would you like me to review it? And I'm reading this. I'm like, you...
800 points gets you.
Do you think it's a little expensive?
4-player online co-op. What's
feel it's at the right price?
How much is 800 points?
That's the reason they're points, man. That's the whole reason they're points.
I think it's like $6 ish.
Doesn't
right?
seem too bad. I mean, it's Doom. I mean, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's all of them, right?
It's all of them.
So. Oh, okay. I thought so.
That's kind of interesting.
It's Doom.
I thought it was just Doom.
Or well, Doom. Whatever the different episodes.
I mean, it's a neat little announcement, but I was pissed that they didn't announce the one Xbox Live Arcade game I really want.
Which is?
Geometry Wars 2.
Oh. Yeah.
Like, how long does it take to make a multiplayer version of that? that's what I want.
Banjo-Kazooie.
Oh.
Whatever.
Any comment on that?
No.
Ooh.
Dude, I'm standing in Mark's office the other day, and I'm looking at him, and I said, so, am I the only one in the office about Banjo? And right as soon as I said Banjo, he looked at me and said, no. It's like, so I what?
I reviewed Banjo-Tooie and I gave it a 6. Banjo-Tooie is not a good game. Banjo-Kazooie,
the first one was a
decent game.
Yeah, I can remember reviewing it on EGM years and years ago, and it was.
Yeah, you know, Rare the Mario 64 engine, and they like made a Mario 64.
But it was on an epic scale. I mean, some of the things that were impressive about it.
Isn't it kind of the poster child for collectathon?
It is.
Oh, and it's sort of tiers and tiers of collectibles. I mean, it's classic Rare stuff.
But the problem with Banjo-Kazooie is it is a Mario 64 clone. It uses the Mario 64 engine. But it took that and added, like, unlikable characters, that being a hillbilly bear and, like, a, you know, googly-talking bird.
A little close to home for you there?
a little too close to home, but there's just nothing there that is like actually cool. And if you're like a little kid, these characters are all right, but like the Xbox audience isn't little kids, so they're going to have to do something to these characters to make them appealing. And the redesign that they showed was, you know, pretty close to the original. And Banjo's nose is a square now instead of a circle. But
maybe they could just do like fur fighters to it.
That's
that'd be
what
great.
You choose to pick out as significant.
I think it's something.
I think it's just Microsoft like trying to say like, hey, look, we can get games like this too. We've got Banjo.
And they need
you
to be,
liked it
they
on
need
N64
to be doing
or
that,
whatever.
Yeah.
But I hope they actually make it like something for everyone, not just for kids. Like, yeah. I think it'd be cool if they made Banjo something that we would all really want to play. Yeah, hopefully.
Is this another Into the Living Room title for you, John?
I think that's what they want it to be. I know that Luke, I mean, if Luke was on, I would hope that he would have be able to tell us about his conversation with Shane Kim from Microsoft Game Studios, because this was a big part of what we wanted to talk about out there is like, you know, how are you going to move away from all of this, you know, pretty adult stuff that the 360 is associated with? It's, you know, I mean, if you look at the bulk of the stuff people are excited about, it's this dark, gritty
BioShock. Hello, if you watch the video, my
Alan
gosh.
Wake,
right?
The Darkness, Alone in the Dark, Call of Duty. You know, Gears of War. Gears of War, which looks like, you know, red Jello pudding is being spewed over everything all the time,
over a charcoal background.
Yeah, it's well, very dark game.
Banjo is definitely the opposite direction from that.
Yeah.
So.
A big surprise for the guys out there. They said again. I mean, I think this follows on from some stuff a while ago. Crackdown again.
Yeah, they were definitely
getting a lot of good. Good vibes from people. You know, they say if you can look past the art style, which is very polarizing, the game is actually like really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
They've nailed
it just
the combat.
Seems like a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I mean,
they've nailed the combat system better than GTA. They've the whole, you know, the more you do something, the better you get at it. System seems to be going down really well, and you know, it's a big open world, and it looks like they're going to be able to expand it a lot through live.
But doesn't it suck that you have to preface it with, if you can get past the art style? I mean, that kind of sucks.
I don't know. I think that's, I mean,
well, that
I
was
think
like,
it's
that was like Lost Odyssey.
But you know what? At least it's not if you can get past the graphics. It's if you can get past the art. I think it's interesting that we're able to have conversations about video games that are that now. It's
that's
about,
true.
It's like, you know, the Keanu Reeves, Philip K. Dick movie, the one that was all rotoscope anime.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Scanner Darkly.
Yeah. I mean, with that, it was like you were talking about the presentation separate from, you know, the story or the, and I think it's good that games are finally getting to a point where by choices that are made about the way it's presented, it can polarize opinions.
From what I've seen of Crackdown so far, the art style kind of stops me. I go,
Yeah, I don't like the colors at all.
Oh,
but if the game
shallow,
is really good,
yeah.
I am shallow. Yes, I'm Mr. Shallow.
If the game is really good, I think people might look past the weird color palette.
Yeah,
we'll have to wait and see. But I wish
agree.
It came out this year. It's next year now too, isn't it? That game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gears of War looks really nice.
I mean, I guess
we
like
saw,
all
we
they
saw that same sequence again.
Yeah,
apparently,
yeah. I mean, they keep showing the same level game. And stuff, but I
okay,
mean,
yeah. We get it. Yeah. A big crab comes out of the ground. but you know, multiplayer sounds like it's a big hit, and
especially co-op.
And co-op sounds to be really good.
I'm definitely down with the idea of co-op.
Shu on EGM played a ton of it over at Epic, and he came back just sort of wildly enthusiastic about it.
So. Yeah, our new issue, which is, I think hits next week, Shu wrote the cover story. It's really entertaining. It's good stuff.
So I think the thing with Gears for the 360 is like that's the counter thrust on the art argument. Because one of the things at TGS, I blogged about this too, is that like at TGS you saw PS3 with like the A teams of Japanese developers mm-hmm. doing their best artwork, most polished stuff, and that Gears of War is that for the 360. And you look
but,
at,
you know, the counter argument there is now that Unreal Engine 3 is completed, all those art assets are available to everybody.
You know what? That's
on,
fine.
On both consoles. But that's just, yeah, that's just to play devil's advocate.
Yeah, but you still have to have the artist. You have to have the artist out there to do the detail work, and it has to fit your game. I mean, just pulling a bunch of Gears assets and throwing them together
we're seeing games that are starting to, I mean, because for a while, I mean, the complaint was all the Unreal 3 Engine games look the same.
Right.
Mass Effect uses Unreal Engine 3 and it doesn't look like Gears and it doesn't look like Unreal Tournament. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's, you know, but it does show that the level of detail they can put into characters, particularly. I mean, there's a screenshot that came out of XO6 that's one of the conversation screens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's your character talking to an alien and threatening him. And the detail, like, you can see his whiskers and, like, the creases in his face and the
that's
detail
awesome.
In the alien. I mean, it looks like skin over, like, alien bone structure. And this is the engine. This isn't CG. I mean, if that's what it can do and hopefully do it at a decent frame rate, although Luke in his write-up mentioned that it was choking a little bit.
It was before, too, yeah.
Yeah.
keep in mind, in the development cycle, final optimization is always where they clean up frame rates. So I'm not worried about that till I see the final game.
Mm-hmm.
I did hear that some people were saying Gears of War AI, they weren't sure about it, but I haven't really heard about that. I need to talk to somebody who played it. So I heard, I saw online people questioning the AI in Gears
of War. It's not long now. 6 weeks. It's going to be out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have faith in Glovie.
Another couple of things just before we move on to the next segment. Guitar Hero 2 360 version was there.
Complete with prototype guitars. Yeah. That looked awesome.
A nice white Explorer.
Oh, God, I want one of those so bad.
Yeah. Skip was complaining they wouldn't let him play it.
Yeah. As Skim put in his blog, paging Mr. Tam, please get those to us ASAP.
Did they talk about, like, downloadable songs and stuff like that, or...?
They didn't, apparently. No, apparently. No. As a matter of fact, they were actually playing just tracks off of Guitar Hero 2. So
right.
So.
Hmm.
I think they can't talk about it yet.
Yeah, they probably don't want to blow the PS2 launch either.
Another thing that people didn't get a chance to play or indeed see was Fable 2. Peter Molyneux talking a big game as ever and showing nothing.
That's kind of like what he did at Leipzig, too, where he just talked about the combat.
Can you imagine if you got like him and Kutaragi together on stage to give a press conference? The power of PlayStation 3 and Lionhead Studios.
And one more thing, Splinter Cell 5 exclusivity, which caused some raised eyebrows.
Yeah.
There was a bit of a clarification on it.
It's a little bit early for...
Yeah,
that announcement, but whatever.
You know, there was a reminder that, well, the first one was developed for Xbox, so what are you going
to
do?
How close are they to running Sam Fisher into the ground?
I don't know. They're concurrently doing Splinter Cells all the time.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. How close are they to actually beating that horse to death?
I don't know. I think this one is definitely a filler Splinter Cell, and I think that 6 is the real...
Mm, yeah.
And we could probably live without 5.
It becomes less of an event when they're like annually or every 10 months.
Yeah.
Or
especially when they're announced before the other versions come out.
Yeah, I think they're definitely marginalizing their product some.
And I was pretty excited to hear that Project Gotham 4 was there. I mean, it's not a surprise, but...
Yeah, but shocked, they just showed CG, right? No actual gameplay.
No gameplay.
But I have to wonder if they're, like, hurting Forza 2 by announcing another first-party...
You know, the weird thing, I mean, what I heard from all of the guys out there was that they had Forza 2 sort of, you know, there to be played, and no one was really paying it much attention.
Hmm.
Very different games. And if they're using the same build they showed us, what they had on display is a work in progress.
Yeah,
piece.
It was a little too early to show when we saw the demo, it was like...
It's the same. That's the same build they're running there.
Probably.
So you're not going to get people enthusiastic about that. It has a lot of placeholder art in it. The engine's not optimized at all yet. It's just, it's kind of a, well, you know what? Here's where we're going.
Yeah.
But I was disappointed to see Two Human being a no-show.
Yeah.
I think
it confirms that it's distant future.
Two Human has a life of no-shows.
But we have all the stuff from XO6 on the URL is xo6.oneup.com and links to all the videos and stuff there. So go check it out if you missed anything this week.
And believe it or not, there was actually other stuff happening this week.
Yeah.
So we'll come back in just a minute and we'll have the rest of the news from around the game world. And we'll be back in a minute.
Hello, and welcome to the 1UP Radio Network. If you know the name of the podcast you'd like to hear, press 1 now. You have selected Radio PM. Starring the editors of the official U.S. PlayStation magazine. To download an episode at radiopm.oneup.com, press 1 now. To listen to a promo, press 2 now. In a world ripped apart by war, only one magazine.
Want to know what's new now? Then join Jim Lauterbach and Patrick Norton as they tackle the latest technology news. They'll keep you informed with their weekly What's New Now podcast. Just go to whatsnewnow.com and subscribe, or subscribe through iTunes.
You're listening to 1UP Yours, part of the 1UP Radio Network.
All right, and we're back, and with Luke away, as we often do, John has handled the news for us. He has a stack of papers ready to go, so I'll let you take it away, John.
I'd originally thought there wasn't going to be much news that wasn't XO6 related, but I have more than I can actually sift through right now. Let's start with the one that hit yesterday. Legislation again. Senator Sam Brownback is currently attempting to move the Truth in Video Game Rating Act through the U.S. Senate. It's a bill that we've seen before.
That's the TIVA.
It was proposed by Cliff Stearns previously from Florida. Great.
That's fantastic.
But the interesting thing about this one is that it's demanding that the ESRB actually plays games all the way through. I'm sorry about that. That was my my AIM making a funny noise.
That was pretty fantastic.
I thought it was Shane.
No, well, sorry about that.
It's because he uses Adium, which has like this great duck.
Yeah, that was actually... Forza 2's Che Chow asking if I was around. Hi, Che. Anyway, so this thing's going through. It's demanding that the FTC has powers to require the ESRB to actually play the games all the way through, which...
They don't even play games. They look at reels.
They look
right?
at
right.
reels. Now, I think the idea of the ESRB being a little more thorough with playing the games isn't a bad thing. In fact, we've called them out editorially on this before. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does raise some questions if the FTC is sort of trying to regulate this. And how do you impose that on World of Warcraft or, you know, some of these really, you know, gigantic games? But the standard sort of pushback is, how can we possibly play through all these games before they come out? To which my response has usually been, well, we do it somehow.
Exactly.
But for a rating, doesn't it have to be a group of people? I mean, it's not just one
person. The argument... The ESRB likes to use people that aren't gamers so that it can be a sort of neutral... And not sympathetic response to the content.
I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea.
The neutral person,
right?
And that a non-sympathetic person is not necessarily equipped to play a 20-hour game in a set period of time and then provide feedback.
I'm not so sure that it's the playing of the games that's material to this argument as it is the thoroughness of it. And the fact that at the moment, it's not especially self-policing, because what they're relying on is the publisher to bring the clips to the ESRB. So that's why you have these occasions like Hot Coffee where they didn't bring us a clip of this. We didn't know it was
enough, and I think playing the whole thing through to completion is overkill. But I think there's definitely some middle ground that needs to be explored.
I agree.
And it needs to come from the ESRB and the ESA and not from the FTC. It needs to be voluntary.
We need to figure out...
Even if ESRBs are more, you know, appropriate and more factual, if there's no enforcement going on, then who cares? Like, so it's a more correct ESRB assessment. But
Shane, what do you want for enforcement?
If kids can still buy it, then what's really changing?
What do you want for enforcement then? Do you want it to be like the Motion Pictures Association?
You know, why not?
Well, because that's a legal regulatory body, and that's a whole other kettle of fish. I mean, right now, gaming is self-regulating.
Right.
You don't want that anymore?
Is it working?
In the current political climate, this argument is never going to go away.
Right.
I mean, that's not to say that we should give up, but I mean, I think the ESRB needs to continue to adapt to remain independent.
I think that, and by adapting, it means we need to be more firm with how we do this.
I'm just going to quit out of that application. Sorry.
I think that was actually Mark. I think that was Mark getting back to you.
Oh, well. Yeah.
Maybe he found Luke.
No,
up on
he
a
didn't.
Beach.
Washed up on a beach somewhere in Spain.
Yes.
Okay, so that, I mean, this one's going to run and run. I'm sure it'll go through the Senate. It might get signed off, and then the courts will throw it out.
Yep.
So that's what happens every time.
Yep.
We talked a little while ago about new Saints Row content incoming a few weeks ago, which never came about. But now we find that the Funky Fresh Pack is coming, everybody.
The Funky Fresh
Funky
Pack.
Fresh.
Funky Fresh.
Wow. 100 of your shiny Microsoft points will get you the Funky Fresh Pack.
Which isn't much.
I don't know. What's 100 points worth? Like $2 or something?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, it's not much, but then...
It's got a bunch of clothing, a bunch of accessories, some new hair, including a ladies' man moustache, which I was very pleased to hear. That will complete. And a split goatee and a sharp-edged mutton chop, which I thought, you know, I'm glad we're digging into these specifics. And some new tattoos that now, Sam, you can get that rattlesnake tattoo
that
you really wanted.
Great.
Are there new places or vehicles or weapons?
Nope. There's a fake tuxedo shirt.
Outstanding.
And a spiked leather jacket, and for you, Garnet, and maybe you too, Shane, leopard skin underwear.
Oh,
wow.
That's great.
That definitely is a funky pack.
Sounds like I'll be able to put together my
entire prom wardrobe. And Luke will appreciate this. Leather chaps, And to go with the leather chaps, I think this might be a really good combo, and I think I might try this. Bunny slippers.
Nice.
Yes.
And there's also an eye patch, a skull ring, a samurai helmet.
All right, next.
Well, that seems like a lot.
That's next. Cool.
Yeah, whatever.
Saints Row. Does anyone care anymore about Saints Row?
I do.
Really?
See?
Yeah.
Really?
People playing it.
Yeah.
I thought you had put, that's not been
it's
put
popular.
Aside.
I mean, it's not the greatest game ever, but it's good.
So that's not going to be superimposed by Just Cause?
I have a copy of Just Cause. I'm going to play it this weekend. I don't know.
So we'll get back to you next week.
Opinions are mixed on Just Cause.
We'll get back to you next week on that one. How about that?
Rockstar announced L.A. Noire this week.
Well, they announced the video that they announced announcing the, L.A. Noire.
Yeah. So October the 5th, so next week, we'll get a better idea, hopefully.
That's going to be, the video is going to be really, really good. I was talking to them about it. Like, they said it's going to have, a lot of gameplay, and, like, it'll really, really show off what they're trying to do with the game.
So the interesting thing with this is that they're partnering with Team Bondi, which is made up of a bunch of guys that worked on the original Getaway.
Oh, that's right, right.
And it's set in the 40s. And, I mean, just from the early brief descriptions, it sounds like a bit of a sort of L.A. Confidential kind of a vibe that they're going for.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
Does partnering with the people who did the original Getaway somehow make us happy? Because the original Getaway was great concept, but really poor execution.
Well, hopefully we'll have concept and execution skills sort of coming together on this.
Yeah, and like the main guy who was there, who's the head of Team Bondi, he's pretty smart. And, he always felt that Getaway was a missed opportunity, and I think this could be a lot better.
It was a missed opportunity.
And the Getaway franchise has certainly gone downhill since.
Ugh. Gangs of London much?
Oh my god, that game's so bad.
Next.
Okay, next. Microsoft makes up for malfunctioning 360s. A bunch of people have been getting the red ring of death. And
I saw one in our office the other day.
Yeah, we've had a couple of those, actually, in the
Microsoft
office.
Noticed a higher number than usual of repairs coming in. They investigated and discovered that the vast majority of the broken units came from the initial manufacturing run of the console. So,
what are they doing about it?
The Gamerscore blog, which is one of the many, many, many Microsoft official blogs right now, says that Microsoft is picking up the tab for all out-of-warranty repairs for busted units in the US and Canada that were purchased before January 1st, 2006.
Huh. Does that mean they pay shipping and stuff too? Or?
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
Everything.
That's very cool. Nice.
What we got next? This is something that we didn't have the chance to talk about last week because it came just after. 1 million Wiis at launch, says Nintendo. It's pretty significant.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Who said this? Hang on. Here we go. Obviously, the earlier you go, the less product you have available, says the Nintendo of Canada VP and General Manager, Ron Bertrand. If we get what we're supposed to get, this will be our most plentiful launch in the 15 years I've been with Nintendo. All signs are actually extremely positive, he says. So it's looking like there's going to be a lot of Wiis out there.
1 million Wiis, 400,000 PS3s, and Gears of War. Wow. I mean, that's a pretty awesome holiday.
Yeah.
Pretty happy with that.
It's the best holiday since 2 years ago when we had, Halo 2, GTA... Yeah, Metroid and Metal Gear.
Absolutely.
I'm pretty happy with that. So good for them for getting consoles ready, unlike other Nintendo hardware launches.
I love that as I'm tossing these pieces of paper, you're catching them. Like you're making a nice neat pile for me. Thank you. Dave Jaffe.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, I'm Dave Jaffe and you're not.
Apparently, HL, I'm trying to think of what HL could stand for.
Is Human
that his
Life.
PSP game?
Huh?
That was, no,
this was his PSP game, the one that was going to make us cry.
Right. Yeah. You know what I heard about that game?
That
was bullshit. Yeah.
No, I heard it used the GPS and you hacked into actual physical locations.
Oh, come on.
No.
And it was incredibly avant-garde and difficult to understand. That's fine.
No, I think it was all made up. That's
I heard that from a reliable source. Right. I was like,
he's working on God of War. The new one.
So,
I agree with Sam on this one. That thing was such a bunch of.
You think he's working on God of War? So
although he did say he's working on something with the
which has similarities to Twisted Metal and Bomberman.
Yeah. See, that's I don't know what that's all about, but no, he is working on God of War 3.
So apparently, the work started on a PS project 6-7 months ago, and as the game is approaching the alpha stage of development, and there's a quote from him, which is presumably from his blog, I think. I could tell you that, man, shorter, less expensive games, wow, what a blast to be working on these things. I feel like the old cartoonists who used to make Bugs and Daffy. How Rankin Bass must have felt, pumping out show after show after show, just knocking them out, and some are, worst case, just average, while some are amazing. But it adds up to a hell of a batting average over time and lots of fun games. I have not dug the work as this much in ages.
Yeah, he hasn't dug the work this much in ages because he's working on God of War and it's fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm. Or is he making, like, downloadable games?
That's what it sounds like. Say.
See, I think that's a different game than God of War 3 that he's talking about there. He's working right. with the guys who did... What's the name of that studio? The ones that did Twisted Metal.
Incog?
Yeah.
Aren't they doing Warhawk?
Yeah, and whatever this is that he's talking about.
So apparently he said, fuck it, we'll do HL later, maybe.
Yeah.
Which is fueling rumors that HL never existed in the first place.
I heard it existed, but it was all fucked up. That's what I heard.
The Madden cover curse claims another victim.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, Brian Indahar warned him of this like a year ago.
He
called it on film. It was something that never actually aired. That we filmed some test footage for ESPN when we were starting our ESPN partnership. And we did some stuff that we were going to work on them with for ESPN News. And we talked to Brian about Madden, and he actually said...
He got it to the week. Nailed it to the exact...
Are you serious?
Week. Yes.
Absolutely nailed it. So wow. Sean Alexander, Seattle Seahawks, 05-06 MVP, was on the cover of Madden NFL 07. It was announced yesterday. When was this? So a couple of days ago, that Sean Alexander has fractured his foot and will be out indefinitely.
Wow. Yeah, and foot injury. I mean, it's just like the Vic thing. A foot injury is a bad news for a guy who's running. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. little bones and lots of hurt. Hard to cut, hard to...
So apparently,
accelerate.
This trend started in 99 when Barry Sanders became the first player on the cover. And a week before training camp, he just up and left. That was the first one.
Left football.
So then Dante Culpepper suffered a season-ending knee injury. Marshall Faulk got an ankle injury. Ray Lewis was unable to score a single interception in the season for the first time in his career when he was on the cover. Donovan McNabb was injured. So,
it's insane.
Don't be on the cover of Madden.
Seriously. I think it's going to end up being Madden on the cover of Madden again.
They're talking about that rumor that Madden's actually going to be lifted out of the name.
Oh, yeah.
With ESPN.
Go with ESPN and make it a football game. You know what? How many more years is Madden going to be a commentator in football?
Good question.
I don't know.
Here's something that you've mentioned in the past, Shane, that the Resident Evil 5 exclusivity stuff. I think Luke brought this up as well.
There was some Peter Moore did it. He denied it.
Yeah. So... And I think as good as we're going to get is that the Microsoft guys have said that they are very good friends with Mr. Inafune, and that's as far as anything will go. Mm-hmm. But actually, the news story that is credited to 1UP staff, which I think means Luke when he doesn't want to take credit for it, quotes your insane podcast ramblings, Shane.
Nice. We haven't seen that game in so long. We all have to wonder what's really up with it. So I guess we'll find out.
Any mention of it while you guys were out in Japan?
No, not at all. Sony doesn't seem to be fighting for exclusives anymore. So
first party games right now.
Yeah.
How much can they fight for exclusives? Because if you're going to make money and you come to America, like you were talking about earlier, you've got to be able to sell to the 360.
Final Fantasy would speak otherwise, and Metal Gear and Devil May Cry, but. You know,
right, but we'll see. I don't know if they're really fighting for anything though. Like Final Fantasy, that was no surprise. Like that was going to come to PS3 no matter what. But I don't think Sony was like begging Square for that.
I don't know. I think we'll see. Not all of these franchises that we necessarily think are going to be exclusives are going to stay exclusive. Right. Is Devil May Cry going to stay an exclusive? I don't know. Is Metal Gear going to stay an exclusive? I don't know. Is Final Fantasy?
This leads nicely into a bizarre quote in the Wall Street Journal this week from Sasaki at Square Enix.
Oh yeah.
We don't want PlayStation 3 to be the overwhelming loser, so we want to support them. He said. But we don't want them to be the overwhelming winner either, so we can't support them too much. What the hell does that mean?
Well, if anything, their support for DS is kind of scary. I mean, they have like 12 DS games at Square Enix. It's a little scary. They're really heavily into DS.
The speculation on this is that there's sort of no indication yet where the next Kingdom Hearts is going to end up. Have you guys heard anything?
I think it'll stay on Sony, but
I think so too.
What they want to do probably wouldn't work on Wii visually. But we'll see.
Would make a nice tie to the Wii. I mean, it would put the demo for the Wii very well.
It'd be perfect for Wii.
It's true.
Yeah. We'll see.
Interesting.
Final one. Apparently, the Wii's web browser will be free in the US.
Good decision.
Until June.
Until
right?
June 07.
That's what I heard. Which is a strange.
Get it before June.
Not sure what happens in June, but apparently that's when you start paying for it.
Exactly.
But it's cool. It supports Flash and Ajax, and, you know, it's like a full on, like, you know, it'll run.
Yeah.
Presumably, based on that, you'll be able to watch YouTube and game videos and stuff like that on your Wii.
Why should you have to pay at all for a browser?
I can't wait.
Why should you have to pay for a browser?
Why should you have to pay for internet gameplay on your next console?
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Why do you want to look at the internet on a 480i television? Oh, my God.
Because maybe you're a kid and don't have a computer.
That's real likely. Come on.
I think a lot of kids don't have computers.
I think there's a lot of access to personal computers, especially in schools. I mean, schools are all wired.
Well, but, you know, I'm confused when anybody tries to downplay the fact that Wii or PS3 has web browsing. Like, are you upset that it has this extra functionality? Like,
no, I'm not upset about it.
Even though I have a computer, I probably will at one point browse the web on the Wii just because it's there.
We've already talked about it more than it's even interesting. I mean, yeah, you're right. It's a nice feature. I'm not going to argue about it. It's fine. It's a nice feature.
No use arguing.
Here endeth the news.
That you're going to pay for eventually.
No, I wouldn't pay for it. Wow. I wouldn't pay for browsing on the internet with that. Come on. Would you? Would you pay for that?
No.
Right.
We'll see.
But like you said, it's not very interesting, so let's stop talking about it.
Yeah. All right, so next week we're going to get back to the normal format. We'll have what you've been playing. We're going to play some Company of Heroes, right?
We are. We're going to play. So we're going to talk about a PC game, which we don't do nearly as much as we want to.
We should. And
Next week is our reunion show. We're all back together.
I hope so. Unless Luke disappeared off the face of the earth. He's still not visible on Skype or AIM.
He'll be all right.
He's all right.
Yeah, he'll be all right. They're having some cocktails and relaxing and... You know, it's all good.
That's
so
nice
until then, give us your thoughts on XO6 and the TGS wrap-up at boards.oneup.com, and we'll talk to you next week. We're out.
This has been One Up Yours, a production of the Ziff Davis Game Group and part of the One Up Radio Network. One Up Yours is hosted by Garnet Lee and John Davison, produced by Andrew Pfister and Mike Ng, and is published every Friday afternoon at podcasts.oneup.com and at the iTunes Music Store.
What's up? I'm not in the fucking credits.